Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Textory. Get some beverage, probably not anything warm because it's actually so hot and the planet is dying. So something cold, and then we're gonna sip on some tea, cold tea, iced tea. Today's episode is gonna sound a little bit like dissecting what modern men have to say about women's fashion or fashion in general. And it's incredible because it was actually, the text that we're reading today was actually written in 17th century. Before we jump into that, make sure to check out my Patreon at patreon.com/textory. You'll find some textory related stuff there, and it's a great way to support the podcast if you want to keep on listening to that. So today we're actually reading two texts that were published separately, but they are sort of a dialogue between each other. So basically, in 17th century England, there was this growing sentiment that women are turning more manly. They are taking up male-dominated spaces. They are dressing masculine. They are smoking pipes. They are carrying weapons. And they are basically just being pretty unapologetic, which was, of course, a bit scary. And to be fair, it's not like all of a sudden women started adopting menswear and male trends and male behaviors. It's more of a paranoia, I would say, because women, even prior to that, obviously owned businesses and appeared in public, and they lived their lives to the fullest extent of what they could achieve in that era as women. But the beginning of 17th century was marked by the reign of James the Sixth and the First. How do you read this? Because I'm always so confused. Like, why does he have two numbers by his name? I know why, but how do you even read that out loud? Anyway, he was, you could say, a misogynist activist. Like, years later, he had an intense period of being basically obsessed with witchcraft. And then when that was over, he was still very critical of anything outside of the ordinary. And he was not very tolerant of views that were not his own. So for a short period of time, which coincided with the last years of his reign, people, including him, I think he also contributed to that sort of scare, but people were becoming growingly obsessed with the idea that women are supposedly starting to look more masculine and turning into men. So this anonymous pamphlet was published in 1620. And it was called Hic Mulier, which is a play on sort of a Latin pronoun and then the word woman. So it's like a man woman. And this is basically what I would describe as a typical bro podcast, but it's 17th century. I mean, just listen to this. For since the days of Adam, women were never so masculine. Masculine in their genders and whole generations, from the mother to the youngest daughters. Masculine in number from one to multitudes. Masculine in case, even from the head to the foot. Masculine in moods, from bold speech to impudent action. And masculine in tense. For without redress, they were, are, and will be still most masculine, most mankind, and most monstrous. Are all women turned masculine? No, God forbid. There are a world full of holy thoughts, modest carriage, and severe chastity. To these, let me fall on my knees and say, you, oh you women, you good women, you that are in the fullness of perfection. He then goes on praising the good godly women that are not like what he just described, which is interesting because he's like, you speak boldly and it's actually insane. You're crazy for that. You have an opinion? Nah, not on my watch. Come then, you masculine women, for you are my subject. You that have made admiration an ass and fooled him with a deformity never before dreamt of. That have made yourself stranger things than ever Noah's ark unladed. That are all things but that which you should be. So obviously, as was quite common around that time, and I think, to be fair, it's still one of the main arguments, is that women are never dressed the way men want them to. So in 17th century, that meant that they were wearing things he didn't like at the time. So he actually points out what he doesn't like about their clothing. The false armory of yellow starch. For to wear yellow on white, or white upon yellow, is by the rules of heraldry baseness, bastardy, and indignity. This is actually a bit crazy because they actually did use yellow starch on ruffs. It was like a local custom, local fashion around early 17th century. And it was basically just dyeing your ruff with saffron. But because it was something new and because it was something that was done sort of en masse, all of a sudden that was a bad thing. Even though I am pretty sure that when ruffs started first appearing in fashion, he was the first ones to, I mean, we don't know who wrote this pamphlet, but 99% it's a guy. This person was probably criticizing ruffs as well. And then when they got used to ruffs, something new appeared, which was dyeing your ruffs yellow. And then that was also a bad thing. So anytime something new appeared, basically, then he goes on with a whole list of things he doesn't like. The monstrosity of your deformity in apparel, exchanging the modest attire of the comely hood called coif handkerchief to the cloudy ruff, only broad-brimmed hat and wanton feather, the modest upper parts of a concealing straight gown to the loose, lascivious civil embracement of a French doublet, being all unbuttoned to entice, all of one shape to hide deformity, and extreme short-waisted to give a most easy way to every luxurious action, the glory of a fair large hair to the shame of most ruffianly short locks, the side thick-gathered and close-guarding the safeguards to the short, weak, thin, loose, and every hand entertaining snort bases, for needles, swords, for prayer books, body legs, for modest gestures, giant-like behaviors, and for women's modesty, all mimic and apish incivility. These are your founders, from these you took your copies, and without amendment, with these you shall come to perdition. I kind of need someone to recreate this outfit, because, so they're wearing a doublet, which was a thing. It was mostly a men's garment, but women also started wearing doublets, and men hated that. Then a short waist, just so you can have access to whatever this guy is thinking about. And then you would have shorter hair, giant behaviors, whatever that means. And in general, just you would not behave like a woman, which was his problem. It's an infection that emulates the plague and throws itself amongst women of all degrees. Yet evermore, the greater the person is, the greater is the rage of the sickness. And the more they have to support the eminence of their fortunes, the more they bestow in the augmentation of their deformities. Not only such as will not work to get bread will find time to weave herself points to truss her loose breeches. And she, that has pawned her credit to get a hat, will sell her smock to buy a feather. She, that has given kisses to have her hair shorn, will give her honesty to have her upper parts put into a French doublet. To conclude, she that will give her body to have her body deformed will not stick to give her soul to have her mind satisfied. But such as are to buy all at their own charges, they swim in the excess of these vanities, and will be men-like not only from the head to the waist, but to the very foot in every condition. Men in body by attire, men in behavior by rude compliment, men in nature by aptness to anger, men in action by pursuing revenge, men in wearing weapons, men in using weapons, and in brief, so much men in all things that they are neither men nor women, but just good for nothing. What I find hilarious is that he's like, women these days are behaving like men because they're so angry and annoying. Which, like, that's not a compliment to your own sex, my dude. Okay, next up he mentions a vizard. A vizard was basically a face mask that was worn, and it was just this black face mask that covered your whole face. And it was basically a fashion item. It was meant to make you look mysterious. But the thing is, you couldn't speak as you were wearing it because you held it by holding a button between your teeth. So it was basically just like a fashion item. Obviously, as any trend that's a little bit odd, men absolutely hate it. It's guts. So he's talking about a vizard here. The fairest face, covered with a foul vizard, begets nothing but affright or scorn. And the noblest person, in an ignoble disguise, attains to nothing but reproach and scandal. Away then with these disguises and foul wizards, these unnatural paintings and immodest discoveries. Keep those parts concealed from the eyes that may not be touched with the hands. Okay. So this was the Hic Mulier, or basically a critic of women acting and looking too manly. But then a sort of counter pamphlet appeared, and it was called, I'm going to butcher this, Hec Vir, or The Womanish Man. And it is actually written in a completely different form. It's not just an essay of the things that the author found annoying. It's actually a dialogue between the Hic Mulier and the Hec Vir. So it's a dialogue between the manly woman and the womanly man, which I find very interesting. It's actually more of a defense of why women are and should be allowed to wear a certain style of clothing. So a reminder, Hec is a guy and Hic is the woman in this dialogue. I'm going to try changing my voice for both of these. Hac. Most redoubted and worthy sir, for less than a night I cannot take you. You are most happily given unto mine embrace. Hic. Is she mad? Or does she mock me? Most rare and excellent lady, I am the servant of your virtues and desire to be employed in your service. Hac. Pity of patience, what does he behold in me to take me for a woman? Valiant and magnanimous sir, I shall desire to build the tower of my fortune upon no stronger foundation than the benefit of your grace and favor. Hic. Oh, proud ever to be your servant. Hac. But fair knight, the truth is I am a man, and desire but the obligation of your friendship. Hic. It is already sealed and delivered to your use, yet I would have you understand I am a woman. So they're basically very confused about who is who and confused about each other's gender because of the clothes that they're wearing, because the woman is wearing manly clothes, so the guy takes her for a man, and then the woman is looking at a guy that is dressed womanly and she's like, that's a woman. So they are basically very confused. But then Hac starts scorning the woman because obviously it's a bigger sin to look like a man. And he's like, literally, like, what is your problem? So he starts explaining why he thinks she's not dressed appropriately. And he describes her outfit in very complicated terms that I think a lot of them are sort of Easter eggs from an era that I would probably understand if I was studying 17th century better. I had to check some of these. I still don't know what they mean, but I'm going to read it anyway and you can make your assumptions. So here is a Hac's description of Hic's outfit. Half Bridewell, half Blackfriars. Bridewell was a prison at the time. That's what I was able to decipher. The one for a scurvy block, the other for a most profane feather. Half Mold Sack, the chimney sweeper, half Garrett the fool at a tilting. The one for a yellow ruff, the other for a scarf, able to put a soldier out of countenance. So again, they had problems with yellow ruffs, apparently. Half Bedlam, half Birmingham, the one for a base sail boot, the other for a beastly leaden geldspur. And to conclude, all hell, all damnation. For a shorn, powdered, borrowed hair, a naked, luscious body bosom, a leaden hole dagger, a highway pistol, and a mind and behavior surable or exceeding every repeated deformity. To be brief, I can but in those few lines delineate your proportion, for the paraphrase or compartment to set out your ugliness to the greatest extent of wonder. Okay, that's a bit rude. They just met and he's like, you're ugly, by the way, and here is why. But then Hic has a really long answer to that, and she's like, okay, this is why it doesn't really matter, which is interesting. My most tender piece of man's flesh, leave this lightning and thunder and come roundly to the matter. First, You say I am base in being a slave to novelty. Back then, calling someone base was basically an offense, saying that they're of low morals or they're just like low, by the way. What slavery can there be in freedom of election? Of what baseness? To crown my delights with those pleasures which are most suitable to mine affections? Now for me to follow change according to the limitation of mine own will and pleasure, there cannot be a greater freedom. Nor do I in my delight of change otherwise than as the whole world does, or as becomes a daughter of the world to do. For what is the world but a very shop and warehouse of change? You know what, she's got a point. Everyone is always like, wow, you're such a slave to fashion. But then they made that choice. They clearly saw a trend, liked it, and followed. And it's not like anyone was begging for them to do it. It's not like they were forced to. Obviously, there are social trends and behaviors that we tend to copy without even thinking. But then why do we pretend like it's not people's own choice? It may be bad choices. They may be affected by some other factors, but they still made the choice actively. So I think that's what she's going on about here. And then she's also talking about what customs are. Next, you condemn me of unnaturalness in forsaking my creation and condemning custom. How do I forsake my creation that do all the rights and offices due to my creation? I was created free, born free, and live free. What lets me then so to spin out my time that I may die free? To alter creation were to walk on my hands with my heels upward, to seat myself with my feet, or to forsake the sweet sound of sweet words for the hissing noise of the serpent. But I walk with a face erected, with a body clothed, with a mind busy, and with a heart full of reasonable and devout cogitations. Only offensive in attire, inasmuch as it is a stranger to the curiosity of the present times and an enemy to custom. I don't know, she ate this speech down. This is such a good argument. She's like, to be unnatural for a woman would be to walk on my hands, would be to hiss instead of speaking. But I walk with my face up, I'm fully clothed, I am still thinking and I'm still obeying most of the moral rules of the society that I live in. So why do you have a problem with how I'm dressed? This is literally not up to you. It has nothing to do with you and it doesn't offend you in any way. And the only thing it offends is a custom that you're used to. And then she says, are we then bound to be the flatterers of time or the dependents on custom? Oh, miserable servitude chained only to baseness and folly. For then custom, nothing is more absurd, nothing more foolish. It was a custom amongst the Romans that as we wash our hands before meals, so they, with curious and sweet ointments, anointed all their arms and legs quite over, holding in the greatest disgrace that might be to use or touch any natural water. Cato Junior held it for a custom never to eat meat but sitting on the ground. It is a fashion or custom to us to mourn in black, yet the Argean and Roman ladies ever mourned in white. For you to cut the hair of your upper lips, familiar here in England, everywhere else is almost thought unmanly. To conclude, custom is an idiot, and whosoever depends wholly upon him, without the discourse of reason, will take from him his pied coat and become a slave indeed to contempt and censure. Amen, girl. I find it really interesting because she sounds exactly what I sound like when I'm trying to argue with people saying that fashion nowadays is not manly enough, that the good old days, men used to look like men and women used to look like women. And I'm always like, yeah, but what days are you referring to exactly? Because there was only like a couple of decades in history, mainly, let's say, 1920s to 1960s, when men were wearing what you would call like classic menswear. But if you actually are referring to history as a whole, to Western society as a whole, there were so many social norms and outfits and changes in men's clothing that this argument completely does not make any sense. Because if you truly want to go back to what people thought was proper for a man, you would wear robes, my guy. And it's always annoying that they only refer to this one point in time. And that's sort of the argument that she's making as well. She's like, well, customs change though. So what if something that we're wearing is not going to be a custom in some time, and you need to adapt to the fashions, and, you know, something that used to be unheard of is now the norm, and then something that used to be the norm is now unheard of. She mentions Englishmen wearing mustache, and everywhere else, apparently, people thought that's a little fruity. So she says that if you follow customs blindly and if you don't allow any change, you're going to be looking very silly at the end of it, because what you think currently is not forever and is not for everyone. And sometimes it's enough to just leave your area and travel around a little bit, and you understand that your point of view is not the center of the universe, and no one outside of your area cares about your local customs and what you guys think. So I find it a really interesting argument, considering it was, again, 1620 that this came out, and yet someone was observant enough to be like, hold up, fashion changes, things that you think are proper now were new at some point in history, and someone was also raising an alarm about how these things are not proper. So there's no such thing as objectively modest and proper clothing. And I imagine back then that must have been quite a hot take, because everyone was feeling very moral and able to tell people off. But then when you actually think about it, what was their argument? Like, why were yellow ruffs bad and white ruffs were okay? Why did you consider a doublet a manly fashion if women were wearing it too? So a lot of these things, they just come as opposition to change. And I think, I mean, it's a bit sad that it's been, what, 500 years almost, and it's still a hot topic, and it's still the argument that's being used, like, oh, things used to be different. Yeah, that's because as a society, we evolve and we change. And one of the really good mirrors to that change is how we dress and what we think about clothes and what we express through our clothing. So I was reading this like, preach, girl, like, this is exactly what I'm having to deal with even nowadays, which is crazy. Like, I still remember my Harry Styles video, and people were like, well, but he's in vogue though, so why are you comparing him to the paintings of old men? Because, girly pop, paintings and portraits of men in fashionable outfits in the past were basically Vogue covers. Like, it wasn't your regular John just getting portrayed in a fancy outfit. That's not the case. So, yeah, I just find it fascinating and worrying that we still haven't solved this. Like, the arguments from 1620 are still something that we have to repeat nowadays to people that think that fashion and clothing is a monolith and it should never change. So let me know what you think about it. Let me know if you agree with the points that the counter pamphlet was making. And don't forget to check out my Patreon at patreon.com/textory for more textory stuff. And I'll hear you in another episode. Bye.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
You know what quality feels like. You can see it in the way a fabric moves, recognize it in a flawless fit, and appreciate it in the details that make our styles unique. It's the standard Coldwater Creek has honored for over 40 years, derived from a rich Mountain West heritage and designed for today in styles that are distinctively Coldwater Creek. For a wardrobe you can count on season after season, visit coldwatercreek.com. Shop new arrivals and save 15% on purchases $75 or more with code IHEART.